This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Recent data shows violent crime is declining throughout Wisconsin and nationally, but local law enforcement is dealing with other day-to-day challenges, keeping public safety a top-of-mind issue in this upcoming election. On today's Newsmakers, we're talking with two police chiefs from different regions of our state. We have Chief Danny Thompson from the city of Waukesha and Chief Kelly Bakken from the city of Altoona in Eau Claire County. You are both leaders in the Wisconsin Chiefs of Police Association. So thank you both for coming here to our studio today.
Thank you. Very honored to be here.
Thank you. Honored as well.
So we don't have the most recent data, but we know that we're hearing that violent crime is trending down throughout Wisconsin and the country. We'll talk about some of those statistics in a little bit. But first, I want to start by asking you, what does crime look like today in your community?
So crime in our community, I'll answer that part and I'll go to the second part, is our most active crime is transient crime, where juveniles are bringing vehicles from another city into our city, whether the car is stolen or involved in some type of felonious act. We'll come into our city, we'll learn about it and take the appropriate action and deal with it. Retail theft, organized retail theft from out of state, coming into the city to commit retail thefts in, like, the Walmarts and big box businesses will come and steal a whole bunch of products and run out the door. So those are the big crimes. But I want to talk about crime trending down. So if we look at 2020 with George Floyd and Ferguson.
All that social unrest.
All that social unrest. We had an uptick nationally of defunding the police. You see a big spike after that defunding movement, where in 2021, major cities, their homicide and violent crime rate doubled.
So you think the two are connected?
I do. When I started the Milwaukee Police Department in my previous life, I'm now the chief of Waukesha, where I'm very honored and happy to be at, I started with at the department 2,100 police officers. I think now they're lucky if they have 1,700 active duty police officers out there serving their community. So now you look at the data today, the decrease, the numbers actually average, if you look at it, 2016, 2017, back to the higher rates of crime, we're still not down to the 2013s and 2010s. Why? But if you look at those 2013s, we had a larger amount of officers working in those communities.
Well, Chief Bakken, and I want to get a sense in your community. So that's Southeast Wisconsin. You were talking about a juvenile crime rate, retail theft. What does it look like in Eau Claire County?
Yeah, and we're seeing very similar things, right? With I-94 goes right through our jurisdiction. We're seeing a lot of that transient crime, a lot of smash and grabs. If they're breaking into vehicles or businesses in stealing things, we're seeing a fair amount of that stuff. We're also seeing a fair amount of retail theft still. And, of course, drug trafficking is a problem, and that's been a problem for quite a while. We're seeing a fair amount of fentanyl-laced marijuana and just fentanyl we're taking off the streets. We still have a fair number of overdoses that we're dealing with. So I would say it's very similar. We're still experiencing similar issues across the state.
So let's look. Real quickly on. So fentanyl is in Waukesha County, I think 22, we had 68 overdose deaths. That's not accounting for all the ones that we saved first responders with Narcan. So that is a serious epidemic trend that we need to not treat as an enforcement issue, as a social issue, bringing all the stakeholders in together to work this.
We'll be talking a little bit about the settlement money that's on the table for law enforcement in the legislature. I want to make sure that we talk about that violent crime downward trend. I want to show that chart again just to kind of better understand what's happening. Wisconsin's rate reflected on the blue line of the chart in 2022. They're just under 15,000 violent crime incidents. That's a rate of 297 per 100,000 people. Violent crime defined as crimes of force such as murder, rape, robbery, aggravated assault. You can see that trend dipping downward. The city of Milwaukee just recognized a 39% reduction in homicides as compared to 2023. That's good news. Obviously, robberies were down 14%. National analysis shows the nation is on track toward the lowest violent crime rates in over a decade. Chief Bakken, is that something to celebrate? Do those numbers tell the whole story?
Well, I think it is. It's obviously fantastic news that crime rates are going down. But I would say, you know, any crime is not good, right? We still need to continue to work in lowering those numbers. As we talked about earlier, you know, those crime rates still aren't down to where they were in 2010 and 2013. And it's something that we need to continue to work on because, like I said, any crime is too much crime.
You know, part of the reason we're doing the show is because this is an election issue. We know that we have candidates, campaigns talking about crime. What would you say to a voter who's looking at crime data? Are they hearing messages about crime is either increasing or decreasing? What does somebody really need to think about when they're hearing those sorts of messages about crime?
So I'm just going to add to what you just said. Our city just did a survey of what was their number one thing that they wanted out of city government. Their number one thing is public safety, is their number one thing. And you'll take that trend in any city, I guarantee you, they want to be safe. And being safe, what I'll tell them is encourage your legislators to work with law enforcement, bring stakeholders together to reduce crime. One is helping training is important, and we'll talk about some legislation later about training. Two is education. Getting funding to help educate our kids not to get involved in crime and drugs and things of that nature. And three is that engagement piece and being in partnership with the community. If we have time, I can talk about the Wisconsin parade, Christmas parade attack.
The Christmas parade in 2021.
Yeah, and how that event, you want to talk about a resilient community in partnership with the police department? Phenomenal.
You've come a long way.
Example, right? But it's together. We can't be divisive. We have to be working together, not just community and police, but also our legislators and city government. All of us play a role
in
it.
Which is why you are both leaders in the Chiefs of Police Association.
Yeah.
What would you say about the high... You've had some bipartisan wins in this last legislative
Absolutely.
Session. I know the Chiefs of Police Association said it was really pretty much a record year for law enforcement getting some objectives achieved. What would you say are those highlights?
Absolutely. The first thing I'll say is that public safety is really a nonpartisan issue. It's what Danny was talking about earlier. You know, it's important that we work together. It's important that we work with both parties on legislative initiatives regarding public safety. I'll mention a couple of them. We had Act 220 was a peer-to-peer counseling bill that was very important to law enforcement. Law enforcement wellness, officer wellness is something that's at the top of our list of things.
To retain officers,
I'm sure. Yes, absolutely. To retain officers and to make sure the officers that we have out on the street are healthy and well and able to do their jobs and able to keep the community safe. It was an important bill to allow those officers to have that peer-to-peer counseling ability and to maintain confidentiality within that counseling is what that bill did. Another one that was very important to law enforcement was the training funds bill, which was Act 227. For years, our training funds were at $160 per officer per year for training is what the state gave us. While we're required to have 24 hours of recertification training per officer every year, as you can imagine, $160 for funding didn't cover much training for a single officer, let alone training your entire department. So our training funds doubled, which is fantastic news for law enforcement agencies to be able to keep their staff trained and to be able to focus on that important training that's very necessary.
Chief Thompson, what were the highlights from the legislative session for you?
One of the big ones is redaction. So redaction law that we currently have now, what most of our public doesn't know is, I'll just speak on Waukesha Police Department. We spend approximately $8,000 a month on redacting body-worn camera video for open records requests. Yes. That's about $100,000 a year. Now, we're a bigger department, smaller department. That cost really impacts their ability to serve the public. I had when we were presenting this bill, a legislator says, well, that's not fair to the taxpayers. Last time I checked, the taxpayers are paying. They are ones that are taking care of operation budget, right? Taxpayers pay for our budget. We're saving the taxpayers money through this redaction bill. It's a big win for our communities. It's a big win for the state. And it's not for law enforcement. This is for our citizens. That's why this bill is so important.
Chief Bakken, I know there's been a lot of talk over the years about a need for more regional mental health crisis centers. The governor just signed a law establishing two new regional crisis centers in the state. Can you tell me a little bit about why this is important and how it will help?
Yeah, that bill is huge for law enforcement. We very much appreciate it. I think it's a step in the right direction, although there's a lot of work that needs to be done on mental health and in helping people that are suffering from mental health. This will help us tremendously, I do believe. Currently in law enforcement, we have one state facility, which is Winnebago. For my agency, who's on the western side of the state, that's quite the drive to be able to take somebody that's in crisis.
Oftentimes, it requires two officers.
Yes, oftentimes it requires two officers to transport somebody that's in crisis. So not only are we now taking a person that's in crisis, we're putting them in the back of a squad car and we're transporting them all the way across the state where they don't have any family support and they feel like they're in custody. So rather than getting help for their mental health crisis that they're having, they feel like they're getting, you know, taken into custody and being arrested for something that's a mental health issue. On top of the transport time, we are required to get them medical clearance. So oftentimes we're sitting in the hospital for 12 hours waiting for medical clearance before we get authorization to transport them to Winnebago. So again, we have this person who is in crisis, who's asking for help, sitting in law enforcement custody for many, many hours and then being transported across the state. And we're leaving these communities in the northern western part of the state, or anywhere, frankly,
that has to travel,
yeah, unprotected. They don't have law enforcement staff to cover that, or they're paying overtime to cover that and backfill that, and it's costing communities a lot of money.
Sounds like more work to do. You know, we talked a little bit about training of officers, the need for better retention of officers. Just looking at the most recent data I could find in 2022, there were just over 13,400 officers in the state. That's the lowest number since the Department of Justice began tracking in 2008. That's a 7% decline in the last decade. What does officer recruitment and retention look like for you and your department right now?
So when I started my profession, I competed against 1,500 applicants for the city of Milwaukee. Now it's not uncommon to have, when I first started in Waukesha, now this is 2020, we had about 300. Post-COVID, post-protest, now we're lucky to have 60 to 30
for
individuals
one open position.
To come in to take an assessment test to apply for the position. It might even be for four or five, but when you have 30 to 40, we are very strict. We might be desperate to hire, but we'll never be desperate to hire. We'll always pick qualified individuals, and we won't fill positions just for the sake of filling positions. So out of the 30 to 40, you might have 60% not meet the cut that they get through. So now you're looking at four individuals or five individuals that we have to actually go through the interview process.
Is it the same story in your part of the state?
Yeah, absolutely. The number of people applying for law enforcement jobs have significantly decreased. I would say the quality as well. You know, with the lower number of applicants coming in, by the time you go through those to fill positions, you have a few that are qualified and that can pass the backgrounds.
Does the legislature need, do they have the ability to help you with this recruitment problem? I know the Chiefs Association testified in favor of a bill last session that didn't pass related to allowing DACA recipients to be eligible for local law enforcement. What kind of help do you need with recruitment retention these days?
So first of all, we, not only us be ambassadors, but we also need the community to be ambassadors of this profession as well. And we need our businesses also be ambassadors of this profession. But where legislators can help us is funding for, so we have a lot of young professionals that are in college or just getting the jobs right after college that might not be able to go to a full-time academy. There is possibilities through legislation help of doing part-time academies where they can go on the weekends and do their academy time there. It will be a longer process for them, but they still get to meet their dreams of becoming a police officer, whereas without that, if they go right into a six-month, five-month academy, because their current life, whatever's going on in their life, they can't do it.
So more options for
more
training
options. Yes.
Opportunity. I just mentioned DACA recipients. I know that state polling shows that border security, immigration issues are really top issues for voters. I want to understand, what kind of public safety concerns do you see in your community that are related to immigration policies? Can you make that direct tie?
I don't know that I can make that direct tie. What I can say is that public safety is obviously important to my community, just like it's important to every community, and that's our focus is on public safety, to ensure that the community members that are in our community and that the people that are coming into our community are safe. That's what we're focused on.
Recently, the state of Iowa passed a somewhat controversial law that would allow local law enforcement to participate directly in the deportation of undocumented immigrants. The Des Moines police chief said, "We don't have the resources. We aren't staffed to take on this responsibility. This is a federal responsibility." How would you respond to this situation in Iowa?
So I've had situations where groups would ask me, how do you respond to this? Our number one priority is keeping our public safe. And we're going to focus our energies on exactly that. So if we run into an individual that's committed a crime, a serious crime, and they are an illegal immigrant, are not here legally, then we'll address that accordingly. But until then, our focus is on keeping our community safe, engaging with our public, and then moving forward that way.
Makes sense. The legislature is, we talked a little bit about the opioid crisis, fentanyl deaths in the state. The legislature is currently deciding how to allocate $36 million in settlement funds. There's recommended funding that would continue Narcan availability to law enforcement, also $1 million in grants to local law enforcement that have had some success in diversion programming, medications. How important is that funding to local law enforcement?
Yeah, it's highly important. I mean, it's something that we're dealing with on a daily basis. We're seeing overdoses. We're seeing people that are addicted who are committing other crimes or suffering from mental health issues. It's important that money is coming back into the communities to combat and to help these people that are addicted to opioids. I don't really think there's a wrong way to spend that money, as long as it's addressing the opioid addictions and the opioid problems that we're having in our communities.
What does that look like in your community?
Yeah, I agree. I think we need a multifaceted approach. Mm-hmm. Is we need funding to help law enforcement, not only on the enforcement side of the house, but also having the personnel to go into not just high schools, into grade schools now, and educating our kids. Because I remember a case not too long ago where we had a scare of an 11-year-old in the middle school with fentanyl-related. That is scary stuff. So we got to start education. The next piece, too, with education is not only getting Narcan available at police and fire departments, but getting our public businesses like gas stations, where if you're moving the stigma where a family member is not afraid to get free Narcan, and they can get that so their individual family member does not overdose. The next part of that is actually getting more Narcan for our officers and training for officers on make sure that they're safe. Because we've had a couple instances where officers were exposed to fentanyl and didn't even know it. And now you have marijuana that's laced with fentanyl. So I remember back in the day, I just grabbed, when I was working on a car, we take the baggie of drug and we go take it to go get inventoried. You have to be very careful, make sure you have gloves on, and make sure you're very careful on how you deal with any type of substance today, because you don't know if it's going to have Narcan type. The next piece is getting legislators to have funding for case managers to do follow-ups, custom notifications of those individuals that have overdosed and survived, and getting them resources so they don't recidivate. By getting a case manager to build relationships with them to help them not recidivate.
So the bottom line message to the legislature is get that money out the door.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So I know you, Chief Thompson, you have a visitor coming to Waukesha on Wednesday, former President Trump. There is concern generally across Wisconsin and nationally about safety related to elections. The Brennan Center for Justice last year surveyed election officials nationally, asked them about safety. Nearly 3 in 4 said that they feel that threats against election officials have increased in recent years. 30% say they have personally been abused, harassed, or threatened because of their job as a local election official. This was an online survey using a list of nearly 11,000 local election officials. In states like Michigan, they're training officers differently, telling them how to take on different roles as it relates to election precautions and safety. Is that issue on your radar? Is safety in elections something you're looking at differently now?
Yeah, safety during elections is something that we're looking at. It's definitely something that I communicate with our election workers, our city clerk, and I have conversations frequently about safety at our polls. We always meet ahead of time so I can at least answer any questions they might have or address any concerns that they have. And I ensure that they have a way to contact us if they're concerned about something, and we work on a response time and how we're going to respond to that. We will even periodically pop in if that's what they're asking us to do, just to see how things are going, ensure that everyone feels safe when they're coming to our poll place.
And we're intelligence driven. What that means is we have local fusion centers that work with 80 plus fusion centers around the country. So if there's groups that are coming in to affect election polling, we'll get that intelligence and then we'll respond accordingly to it. So when I say intelligence driven, we'll do the normal traditional practices of keeping our polling center safe. But if there's intelligence driven, we'll actually respond accordingly to address it before it becomes a problem.
So definitely an issue that's on your radar.
Yes.
We're in Wisconsin. Speaking of intelligence, how do you anticipate that artificial intelligence will change law enforcement? Is there a lot of opportunity there?
Yes. A great one that's currently on our radar, we'd like legislators to push forward, is early gun detection, artificial intelligence. What that is intelligence goes into a camera. All schools today have cameras in it. So you put that technology in there. What it does is it's basically a blank screen until it actually sees an algorithm that identifies with the gun. When it sees that gun, it'll automatically alert a watch desk. Within 7 seconds, it's actually going to a dispatch center and police are responding. Statistics have shown that a camera's captured an active shooter 2 minutes prior to an event happening, but because it wasn't monitored, there's no police action. This early detection can actually get it started to intervene before kids are getting harmed or before active shooter event is occurring at some location. So artificial intelligence is coming.
Now that was a bill that didn't pass this
session.
That
didn't pass, yeah.
So probably go back and ask for that again?
Yes.
Yeah. Important thing as well about that is, you know, our response is much quicker because we're getting notified much quicker, but also that artificial intelligence is following that person that had the gun through the school, and we're being notified by the dispatch center of that exact location. So it's saving us a tremendous amount of time in our response in locating the actual suspect.
And it's also keeping our kids safe because we're going directly to where the threat is, because the camera and the artificial intelligence is telling where it is. So if we're at one location, you have a whole bunch of kids running, we know that that's not the threat. We know exactly where it is, which will create more efficient response time and efficient in our response and engagement with that individual.
So it sounds like that's a priority coming up in the next legislative session, maybe to talk about that again. We talked a little bit about a need still for those mental health crisis centers. What are other priorities for the chiefs of police for the next biennial budget?
I would say that the mental health...
That's the big one.
It's the big one. It's on the top of the list. It's been an ongoing problem for many years. Our system is broken. It's in dire need of repair. And I think there's a lot of things that we can do. Not only can we have those crisis centers, but we need to have a community approach to make sure that these people are getting the support that they need within their communities so they're not into that crisis mode. We need to prevent them from going into crisis mode. So that's a big one for us. That's definitely going to be at the top of the list of making some progress, and hopefully we can fix some things and make that system better.
You're going to have some new legislative maps, some new faces in the legislature. Do you think that changes bipartisanship on law enforcement issues? Are there other promising issues?
I don't think that changes anything, because we are partners in both. So whatever the boundaries are, really has no effect on us, because we're here to work with whatever our citizens elect, who they elect, that's who we work with. And we should, I think, would have a common goal, and that's keeping our public safe, ensuring that we can give them the best quality of life that we can in their communities, and that we're working together, and that we're actually breaking down silos and building bridges. And that's what we need to do. So it's not the boundaries, it's the people working together, and it has nothing to do with if you're right or left. We swore an oath to protect both, to be a part of both.
So we talked earlier about the social unrest of 2020, the death of George Floyd, anti-law enforcement sentiment. Do you see healing in your community around that? What's changed since then?
Yeah, I think, from law enforcement, there's a acknowledgement that we need to work with our community, right? We know that we need our community partnership, that we have to work on building those relationships and maintaining those relationships. We work through transparency. That's one way to build those relationships. And just ensure that we're hearing them. You know, we're hearing what they want in regards to public safety, what they need from us, and that we're working in partnership with them in building those partnerships. I think we've done our tremendous job in building those partnerships and in maintaining those partnerships and continuing with that into the future.
I know the 2021 Christmas parade attack was a significant incident in your community. How is Waukesha healing from that? What does it look like
today?
We're
still continuing to heal, both not only in the community, but also it traumatized a lot of our first responders as well. And it's still a work in progress. But what I really love is the resiliency of our community. Our community and our first responders said, we're not going to let this define us. It's going to refine us. We're stronger today than we were prior to November 21 of 2021. I just want to say one comment, going back to my prior life in Milwaukee, is when we talk about healing, is there is still much trust between the community and the police officers. See it every day. But you not hear that from public media. You'll get a lot of small, loud voices that are speaking where it's not truth. Because even in spite of all the stuff that was going on, the cooperation with the community and the police in Milwaukee, Waukesha, everywhere, there's still a lot of respect for law enforcement. There's still a lot of partnerships where the community still trusts. But you don't hear the lot in media. You hear more of the negative stuff that's
happening.
Something
for voters to pay attention to.
Yes.
To listen to what's happening on the ground.
Yes.
Well, thank you both for the conversation today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye. your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.